November 11, 2023. It's the Watch for Pedro show.
I think the majority of musicians are interested in truth. You know, they've got to be, because a musical thing is a truth. If you play, make a statement, a musical statement, and it's a valid statement, that's the truth right there in itself, you know. And if you play something phony, well, you know that's phony, you know. And all musicians are striving to get near perfection as they can get. Mm-hmm. And that's truth there, you know. And so in order to play those kind of things, play truth, you've got to live with as much truth as you possibly can, you know.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Fuck. Forgot to hit the monitor. 22 years and a half of doing this and still blowing clams. People, you can tell I'm not man alone mode here. I got brother John Wright all the way from
Hello.
Up north.
Got it all up and working there?
Yeah, let me tell the people what they just heard. They heard John Coltrane talking to August Bloom about Truth and Music, June 15, 1958. Then we heard something from No Means No called Youth. Somebody once told me that youth is most wasted on the young.
Yes. Well, I guess you and I both had a lot of youth, and now it's a little bit behind us. But you know, the way I'm approaching music again, I kind of feel like I'm 25 years old again anyway.
They got this thing in Asia called Kanreki in Japan, they call it, but they got it in China and Korea, too. Like, if you reach 60, it's like round two.
Right.
Yeah. Why not? But let's go back, because I want to learn about your journey. Can you bring your earliest musical recollection, please?
Earliest musical recollection? Let's see.
Remember, it's a Watt for Pedro show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, music was always in my household. My parents like to listen to music, and they like to dance and whatnot. My father was a huge music lover, but the only thing he could play was the radio, as we used to say. And then of course my older brother Rob, you know, who I ended up, of course, making No Means No music for so many years. He's 8 years older than me, and I also have an older sister, Shelly, who is 10 years older. So I was born in 62, and by, you know, the end of the 60s, they're all buying the singles and the records and all the hip music at that time, the Beatles, of course. So there was always a lot of music going on.
But you ain't got a singular, because some cats been on the show, they told me they heard stuff inside their ma's womb.
Oh, well, I don't think I can go back that far.
Okay, what about this pad you grew up in where your pop played the radio? Was there any musical instruments?
My mother taught piano for many years, and she had her family piano that my grandparents bought for her, I think. Don't quote me on that. Back in the 30s to learn how to play piano in the household, and that piano still exists. I still have it. It's down in the pub that I attempted to own and run. So that piano was always in the house, and both my sisters, I have another sister as well, 4 years older, and myself all took piano lessons in the house. My father had a guitar but never played it. Gave it to my brother. He won it in a poker game, apparently.
Yeah.
And there was an instrument
in
the house.
Did you jump on that piano?
Yeah, I used to pound on it, much to the chagrin of my mother.
Did you have to go through the...
Using it as a drum.
Yeah, but you know what? It used to be in the rhythm section, you know, in the old days when it was everybody against the horns. Did you have to go through the ordeal of piano lessons?
Well, sort of. I mean, I didn't pay much attention. I wasn't totally into it until later in life. And I started banging around on the shelves and the pots and pans. So my parents bought me a snare drum when I was like 10 years old. And, you know, whatever. I had the snare drum. I banged around.
Can I ask you about school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Yeah, no, not marching bands. They weren't as popular up here as they are down in the States. But exactly, that's what happened. I grade six, so I'm like 11, and we recently moved from Alberta. My father was in the Air Force, so we moved around, but I was late in the game, so his last posting was out to the West Coast here in Canada. And actually, that was when the Canadian forces, for some reason, decided to amalgamate the forces, Navy, Army, Air Force. So he ended up on a Navy base to finish out his career there, his contract. And so we moved to Victoria, and I started grade six, and they had the school band. And I was saying, oh, I want to be in the school band. So went down, and you have the sort of initial after-school meeting, who's going to be in the band, how many people, and the teacher, you know, said, who wants to play percussion? Who wants to play drums? And, of course, about 25 hands go up. And he goes, okay, well, everyone can't be in the percussion section, so who here has a drum? It was like me and two other people. I have a drum. I have a snare drum. Okay, you're the percussion section. And that's how I got started. So that snare drum that my parents bought me was the reason I ended up in the school band. And, you know, who knows what I would have done musically anyway. But that's how it all rolled out. And, yeah, I went through the whole junior high, elementary, junior high, high school school programs, which was all kind of orchestra stuff, but yeah, jazz. And the jazz band is what I wanted. I wanted to play the drum set. And so, yeah, there was a lot of
Trap Kit. 70s. You know where that name Trap Kit comes from, right?
What does it come from?
Contraption. New Orleans, right? It's invented in New Orleans, and they didn't know what to call it. So, yeah. Let me ask you this. What was the first record you bought with your own money?
Oh, my God. A single. But I can't remember what it was.
Mine was a single, too. It was from that Winnipeg band, Guess Who?
Oh, really?
American Woman.
I remember getting 25 cents a week allowance, like in 1970 or something, and the single was 50 cents. And so I remember negotiating with my parents about getting an extra allowance early.
What was the first gig you saw?
Gig? God, you're going way back for me here.
I'll tell you my first gig concert with me and D. Boone saw T-Rex, 1973.
Oh, yeah. What did I see? As I'm mentioning in school, you know, I was getting into the jazz program. So I went and saw Buddy Rich and Thad Jones and Muddy Waters and there was another biggie in there. Because Victoria was, a lot of music. And that's the other thing. Victoria is itself a lot of music. And it turned out in the end, punk rock as well. So a lot of big names came through Victoria. I can't remember exactly my very first concert. Went and saw Cheap Trick.
Okay. Look, I'm on point.
I didn't see any of the big rock guys. I wasn't really into the rock music at that time. So.
Understood.
I'll tell you the first gig that made me going to be a band.
What's this?
DOA.
Yeah, great band.
DOA and the Dish Rags at the university. My brother worked in the Commons Block, and which is the place where the students would all go eat, the students that lived on campus. And it was a big hall they would eat in, and they would put music on occasionally, concerts. And I ended up working there part-time after school in high school. And my brother was into listening to a lot of the punk rock that was coming out in the late 70s. He was totally into it, and I didn't really know too much about it. But he said, let's go see DOA and the Dish Rags. And I went, well, okay. And, you know, I'd never seen anything quite like it. And that's what, okay, well, we're going to be a punk rock band.
Whoa. I want to play Dead Bob, Party of One.
Oh, Thank you.
for Pedro show, that chunk of music started off with Dead Bob doing Party of One. Then we had Agnes Steck after that out of Texas with Eleanor Skelter Together Over Me. April Clocks, brand new. Disappearer. Wick Weaver, brand new. A Bouncing Act. Scurry That. Bite the Walls. Brand new for Position Normal in England. This is part 2 of 10. Whistle Conversion. The Boy Who Knew Too Much from Tobin Sprout. A new record of his kind of odds and ends. Circus Dills, Bob Pollard. Yet another proj. The Age of Transfusion, Corridor of Drunken Madness. Dream Texas with Love It Anyway. Brand new. Oregon's Out of Ireland, Groovy Bruce. Finally, Dead Bob with Make Believe World. Okay. You kind of alluded to this, but no means no, that's your first band.
Pretty much, but not technically.
Okay.
My brother and I
Clear that up for me.
Yeah, my brother and I, started, right, he'd moved away from home. He was 8 years older than me, and he moved back from Calgary when we were in Victoria by this time, and I was like 16. And he brought back with him a TAC 4-track tape deck, which was, at the time, I mean, that was pretty state-of-the-art home recording situation. You could overdub, for Christ's sakes. And he wanted, he bought it. He was just like, he was totally getting into playing music. He self-taught, picked up the guitar, my father's guitar, actually, that I mentioned. And I was totally down. I was like, yeah, I've always been fascinated with recording and have been all my life. So we just started banging around. We got a little mixer and some mics and started writing some songs. And we wanted to play, but so it's, well, if we're going to, be a band, if we're going to do this, we better join a band and get out there and play. So before No Means No, we ended up like in a bar band. A local band in Victoria called Castle, a fellow named Rob and Rob Castle. And it was like, hits of the 60s, 70s, R&B kind of stuff. Stuff you do like four sets a night at a pub. But so that's how we kind of got our feet wet, to go out into bars. And I wasn't, I could play in the bar, but I wasn't able to drink in the bar. So that was just kind of get our feet wet, and definitely it was a good experience to actually get out into pubs and nightclubs and play. So that was actually the first thing that Robbie and I did as in a band, quote unquote.
And how long?
That was probably only about a year doing that.
No Means No?
And then No Means No, that name. We were bantering around names, and then Robbie saw it. It's an anti-rape slogan. It still is, I think. And he just saw it, No Means No, painted on a wall somewhere, and he was like, yeah, that's what we should call ourselves. And so we did, and we released a single, a half a single, shared one with
Before that? What was the first No Means No prac like? Because you decide you're going to be a band, you're not going to be in Castle anymore, right?
Yeah. Well, we were already kind of writing our own music.
Oh, okay.
And
so the first No Means No song is actually during the Castle days.
Yeah, for sure. I don't really remember what it was, probably some blues jam was the first thing we recorded. But, we released we recorded a number of songs and then released one called Look Here Come the Wormies, which was actually one of my songs. And because we could overdub, it had guitars and keyboards, and it was kind of a cheesy pop rock song. But that was and then when we released
we had a
name, and that's No Means No. That's the first thing that the name appears on.
Were you writing songs before that? Well, how did you get into songwriting? That's great to hear that a drummer. Chico Hamilton couldn't even get songwriting credits. He said drummers don't write songs.
Oh, I've been writing since I was in school.
Okay, that's great.
As I was saying, I was kind of into big band, and in grade 10, when I was, well, I was 16, I wrote and scored a song for the big band.
That's bitchin'.
that's kind of like a Count Basie ripoff, you know. So, you know, it's pretty generic, but
you know, Count Basie couldn't read or write music.
Yeah. Well, I could barely do it either.
No, but ain't that a trip? His thing was mainly riffs and stuff. I read this recently, this Charlie Christian bio, and Kansas City plucked a lot of the cats from Oklahoma City, and they're talking about. Let me ask you this. Did you release No Means No stuff before there was a No Means No gig?
No.
Okay. Tell me about the first No Means No gig. Not Castle.
But first No Means One. No. I can remember, I don't know if it was our first one, but maybe our second one was, actually the most impressive one, not the most impressive, but the strangest one was within the first three shows, we played Maximum Security Prison.
Whoa.
Out in Matsqui. Because my brother was in a relationship with a woman at that time. And she was, she would correspond to prisoners, and same as a good friend of hers, and they, I don't know, they somehow like arranged for us to go play at the prison, which was the strangest experience. An odd way to start out.
Yeah,
let's put it that way.
Now, John,
we played as to finish that thought. When we started, we didn't, like I mentioned, it was just my brother and I. When we recorded, we could overdub guitars and stuff. But when we decided to go out and play out after Castle, I said, well, it's just the two of us, bass and drums. So we started to write at that point. Robbie kind of sat down. He really didn't know how to play the bass very well, but you know, his guitar playing and then eventually his bass playing became like playing a guitar. So he kind of picked up the bass from that perspective, and then we started writing those early songs that you hear on the album Mama that we released in 1982. So we started playing as a two-piece, and about we released The Signal in 1980, released an EP in 1981, and at that point decided we'll play live as a two-piece. So about 1981, we started playing live as a two-piece.
Before that, how were you playing live?
Bass and drums, and Robbie did all the singing.
Oh, no,
mostly.
But before that, you said, from the first gig, you were a two-piece.
Okay. Apart from Castle, we were the bar.
Yeah, I understand.
We were the rhythm section.
Yeah, right.
The first No Means No shows were just my brother and I.
Yeah.
And it's kind of why we ended up, you know, I sat on stage left from the musician's point of view. I guess stage right from the audience point of view, because we played a show in Victoria, I think, and then we ended up going over and playing Vancouver right away. And we set up, you know, we get there, we're backing up one of the backup bands, the opening band or something. So the drums, there you go, you sit in the middle, and my brother's out in front of me with his back to me. And we went, well, this is completely stupid, because there's only the two of us.
I agree.
Might as well face each other.
Yeah.
So right away, I moved out and onto the front of the stage, off to the right, and we played that way forever after that, which was kind of the old, for me, it was kind of normal, because the drums would set to the side in school all the time in the jazz bands. And so it was kind of, it seemed like a natural thing. But yes, the first shows were just my brother and I.
Can I ask you how the prison show went over?
It was hard to say. About half of the people left after about two songs. They weren't obliged to stay and watch the show. Probably more than half. But there was maybe 250 inmates, somewhere in there. So I'm just thinking way back. But probably 50 plus stayed to the end. And, you know, there was, I think, nothing like any of them had ever imagined, seen, or had ever seen. Certainly it was the strange situation for us. I remember one guy got out of his chair and started dancing around, but, you know, they had to behave themselves. So it was odd, but... Yeah, You can only imagine, I guess. I don't know if you've ever been in it. That was the one and only time I've ever been in a prison. Thank God.
I think some of the subhumans had to go to prison.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the original.
The baseman, right?
Yeah. He took his politics a little too seriously and planted a bomb. Went to prison for that.
Yeah. Look, we're at the end of the first hour of the November 11, 2023 edition of Wild for Peter Show. Special guest, John Wright. Hold tight for hour two. November 11, 2023, second hour of Wild for Peter Show.
Change really happens.
Pedro show start off second hour. Dead Bob. That was too easy. I was getting enlightened off air people by hearing about John writing a TV jingle and using his 70 influence because being him was yeah. very much product of the 70s.
Absolutely a product of the 70s, man.
Calling John after that would light it up. Blobby with Giuliani, MB Jones. Haunted by the Video Phone, Susie Analog, and Jay Lynn with Nice to Meet You, and Doc's Electric with He, Ye, Naylene, and finally Dead Bob, Just Breathe. So, you know, no means no. What is it, Dad? The one with all the reference to Ulysses and Jim Joyce.
Oh, yeah.
Your brother, Rob?
That was my brother, Rob. Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Because I was big time into that book, too, and that always tripped me out. In fact, there's one big poster of the pieces, the separated and destroyed, whatever. I got that in my prac pad. I use it for inspiration. I always think of Dad, even though that ain't Dad. But
yeah.
It was a trip that there was another band at the same time as Minutemen getting into that stuff.
Well, yeah, that's all my brother. He was still is a huge James Joyce fan, and actually he's claimed to have read all the way through Finnegan's Wake about three times or something. He says I was by the third or final, maybe it was more. He says, I was starting to, you know, get some semblance of what was going on.
I think it's about his kid.
I've never read any James Joyce. I remember one of our early posters, though, from back in Victoria in the early 80s, had a quote from James Joyce, "Why do I am a look like a passport?"
Yeah, please. Absolutely. I remember that.
But, yeah, he was – I'm afraid I can't talk too much about him. You'd have to talk to my brother about it.
No, but the whole idea of being in a band and some guy unloads some stuff on you that you ain't familiar, but you want to make the band work, right?
Yep.
So you do your best. But you were talking about you presenting him with songs. I didn't know that. That's great. That's so fucking
awesome. Yeah, a lot of the music was a collaboration of my brother and I. He was, you know, certainly the main singer-songwriter. He was the singer mostly. There was a period of about 2 years in the mid-'80s when he blew his voice out. And this was after Andy Kerr had joined the band with us as a guitar player. And Andy took over the vast majority of the lead singing for a couple of years, which was great that he was a great guitar player, front man, very capable, and that really kind of saved our ass. That might have been the end of it right there. But then Robbie regained his voice towards the end of the 80s, and then then it was great guns after that. His voice dropped at least a half an octave, and he became an incredible singer. But I wrote a lot of music. I wasn't too much of a lyricist. Some songs were entirely mine, words and music. Everything in the end, of course, was a product of rehearsal. But I brought a lot of music, and he wrote a lot of words for that. And that was actually, kind of putting together this Dead Bob and 80s putting out Alternative Tentacles is re-released in the No Means No Back catalog now. And I was looking back, like, wow, there was a lot of songs, a lot of collaboration of my music and his words. And I never really thought about it too much, but a lot. And Lifelike, which is the title track of Dead Bob, the reason that song, I released it again, was because we put it out in 1998, I think, on Dance of the Headless Bourgeoisie. Not an outtake, but not sure it even ended up on. I guess it was on the double vinyl. It was kind of relinquished to obscurity right off the bat. And we did a good version of the song, but we weren't quite the right band for it. And I found the old demo, my original demo that I used to demo songs on a Korg M1, which I still have actually. When it was the end of the 80s. I think I bought it in 1990, starting to get into, looping and all this sort of stuff on a keyboard. And I listened to it, and I went, this song was kind of written as a pop song. And I thought, I'm going to redo this song just for my own, pet project. There was no thought of releasing it. There was no any inkling of Dead Bob existing at this time. This was about 3 years ago. And I want it to be layered. I want it to be more choral. I want it to be both man and woman singing and just be more of the pop song that it was kind of written as. But I ended up just really liking what I ended up with. And a woman named Selena Martin, an incredible singer and a great songwriter on her own. I don't know her well, but I've met her a few times. And I thought, she'd be a great singer for this song. And she lives in France now. She's Canadian. And she was like, yeah, sure, I'll sing it. So it was one of these kind of file-sharing things, emailing some files back and forth. And so I kind of assembled that. But one of the reasons, too, is, as I mentioned before, this collaboration with my brother, I always thought that was, like really one of the best ones, a real standout. His words and the sort of feel of that song just went so well with the music. And it's a bit of a pop song, but I really thought it was a success in marrying his words to my music, which we've done many times. So I was really happy to redo it. And then when the whole thing about releasing a record came around earlier this year,
I'm putting this song up.
I love it.
I gotta tell you, John, we ain't gonna hear that till the beginning of the third hour. I didn't know you were gonna spiel about it now, but let's hear some more for thing, and then we'll get into the Dead Bob manifestation.
no tomorrows. Got no regrets. Got no yesterday. Time to forget. Live through the sorrows. Live through the pain. Live in the moment, 'cause it's time again.
Start off that chunk music with Dead Bob doing "I'm Gonna Make You Cry," even though we're talking about life, like we're gonna hear that at the beginning of the next hour, people. Jess Joy after that with "The Other Cheek." Marty Stern, "Plain Speak." Eugene Chadbourne, Wendell Hardy's "Dad Made Ice Cream." Regana with DTA. Ray Shin with "War on Self-Reflection." Finally, Dead Bob with "No Tomorrow." So Dead Bob actually starts with the reworking of a tune that was kind of, well, I don't know. It was a no means no tune, but not front burner.
Is that Lifelike you're talking about?
Yeah, the one we're going to hear next hour. Because it's actually what starts, because I wanted to get into this Dead Bob Proj. I mean, this is right. What made me aware that you were active with music again.
Yeah, well, you know, as I mentioned, Lifelike being more of a pet project for me before there was any designs of a band or releases. But yeah, so much music that my brother and I wrote together. And the first song, or no, the second song on the album is what's it called, White Stone Eyes. And that is a Nomi's No, not a Nomi's No song, but that was another Robbie, my music and Robbie's words, trying to put it together back again at the late 90s, early 2000s, I can't remember exactly when, that just didn't go anywhere. It's in the key of C, drop C on keyboard as I wrote it, and Robbie, you know, he could, well, it wasn't working to play live on bass. We tried to tune it up to E, and it just didn't sound right. It was just a song that was a good idea and never really went anywhere with the band, but something that I revisited again later, towards the end when I moved up here to Lund, the end of the road here in British Columbia. It was like the first time I lived by myself, as a matter of fact, and I got a lot of writing done. I got really back into old demos and new demos and got busy on a project with the band of robots from Berlin, Compressor Head, and again, this is a song I revisited, and so that song is one of the last Robbie and myself collaborations that's out there. He did not participate in that recording at all, or even in the way I arranged it. I just kind of did it myself and said, "Hey, I finished that song, Rob."
That's the way it goes sometimes, though. You know, yeah. I love it, man. I love it. I want to get into Dead Bob more when we hear Lifelike, because we're at the end of. Second hour, November 11, 2023, edition of Watt Peterson, special guest, John Wright. Hold tight for hour three, people. November 11, 2023, it's the third hour of the Watt Peterson show.
of humanity. Those murmurs fill my ear, but the voice of God I cannot hear. As I walk along that busy street, although there's nothing left to seek, the strings of the tears of
Watt for Pedro show start off third hour. Dead Bob doing Lifelike. Then we heard Crane doing Where We Belong. Atavin with False River. Rusk to Build a Farm. And Dead Bob, White Stone Eyes. Tunes you were just talking about. So, too bad I didn't have that at the beginning. But you know what?
I think, John, you know what I did?
I didn't know what sequence to put them in. So I think it went from the shortest tune to the longest tune.
Oh, that's the way it panned out.
So, okay. Now, Dead Bob is just a record. Did Dead Bob ever do a gig?
Dead Bob is going to do our first gig ever next Thursday, November the 16th, in Kamloops, British Columbia. We ended up booking eight official shows and one kind of private party show over the next three weekends. We're going to give it a go. When I put the record together, I was saying it was like kind of revisiting a lot of old demos and songs, and started when I moved up here, I eventually built a workshop and realized I could put my drum set in it. I haven't had my drum set where I've lived since like 1985 or something.
Jeez. And, that's a little bit.
Always had a practice place. One year in Vancouver when I moved over there in 93. I think we had in 1 year in a house. I had my drums in the basement, but that doesn't matter really. But the point being is that COVID came along and I was able to have some time and started revisiting these old songs, as I said, and started putting live drums down on them. They were all demos and a lot of loops, a lot of program drums and stuff, and start to make them into real songs. I started to replace all this with real drums just as a start, and was like, wow, I was digging it. I was liking it. It's like, okay, listen, I'm going to finish a bunch of these songs. But there was, once again, no idea of being a band, no idea of becoming a live act again. And so there was no band. I could do whatever I wanted. I'm going to put this instrument. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this sound. And some of those early things, I don't even know how I got the sound. So here I have, 3 years later, 2 years later, I have an album with these songs, and now we have to reproduce them. They've literally never been rehearsed. They weren't put together as a band. It was an entirely different approach to writing altogether.
But maybe that's good.
Yeah. No, it's been I kind of taught myself how to play to the grid, you know, and all that sort of stuff. It's been a good experience working in the digital world on the computer. And then in the end, though, I couldn't – I said, well, I want to release some of this stuff. And to finish it, I don't want, like, digital horns and stuff like that. I wanted in my guitar playing, and certainly my bass playing, is pretty rudimentary, shall we say. So there's stuff I wanted to be replaced by people who actually could do it. And I reached out to some friends, and one was Byron Slack, who plays in a band called Invasives, which I think you would really like. Awesome band, toured with Nomi Snow and the Hanson Brothers several times, a good friend. He's a great guitar player and drummer. We collaborated on one of the songs for the robot band, Compressor Head, was a song that he wrote and I programmed for the, and then he sent me some demos for some other stuff, and I ended up taking one of his songs, the opening track to the album, Just Breathe, is actually written mainly by Byron. And I kind of turned it on his head. I rearranged it. I changed it quite significantly. But so he's there on the album. And then another fella, Ford Peer, who I've been working with in different projects since the early 90s, like I said earlier, I'm not a prolific lyricist, so a lot of the what was missing in a lot of songs was some lyrical content, some words to put focus. And he's quite a prolific writer, so I reached out to him. I sent him some demos, and he ended up writing That Was Too Easy. That's his words that I put to some music of mine. Kind of crazy because he wrote them for another song. these don't really work. And I, wait a minute, they work perfectly for this song. And then I sent it to him. So he said, well, there's your words. It's just not on the same song that you wrote them for. But
wow. Are any of these songs?
I was mixing, matching, arranging. I was really fucking around with everything.
Yeah, are any of these songs 100% you? Or do you
100%
get your...
me. No Tomorrows, you mentioned.
Yes.
That's 100% me. And I even left the Apple loop that song is based on. Because that whole song was written around that loop.
Oh, wow. What about One of You?
One of You, that's 100% me as well. And that's, again, the opening snare drum to that is an Apple loop. I just found some Brazilian loop. And I said, oh, fuck, I love that. I love that snare feel. I love that rhythm. You know, I love rhythms on snare drums. And so I just strung it out for a few minutes and started creating a song on top of it. And it evolved quite a bit from that. Live, I was saying Byron, who's playing with me live, Ford is playing with me live.
Yeah.
A woman named Christy Lee Audette, who came up and did some trumpet playing for me. She's also a guitar player, keyboard singer. She's in the band. So Ford's taught himself how to play trombone. So I got a little horn section going. As I said, Byron plays drums. So that song, we open up with the snare drum, and that's Byron on snare drum. So we get that rhythm cooking. And
let's listen to One of You right now.
Thank you. ever have one of those days. Nothing. I was standing under a streetlight wishing I had a cigarette. I can't recall anything unusual about it. There was something in the air, in the sky, and clouded over. I wasn't aware. I was too bored to care. Now thunder roars. No lightning cracks. No missiles rain from the sky. This was no sneak attack. There was just suddenly this awful lack. Things had changed, that's for sure. Yeah! The day everything became nothing. You couldn't put your finger on one hand gone wrong. The alleys were still dirty. The garbage still smelled. There was no panic in the streets. Just a lot of grief on people's faces, in their eyes. A mixture of horror and total surprise. This was no apocalypse. No one heard a voice from the sky. There were no miracles at the 7-Eleven. No one screamed, no one even asked why. It was just like everything had somehow, quietly, died. So let it die. Much of what happened next. I've been on my way to visit this woman that I knew. All they had in common was good sex. And now I couldn't even remember her address. Too bad. The strangers got together and we formed a committee to discuss the problem. We talked about things like assured mutual destruction
and emotional responsibility.
Yeah! I couldn't remember my name, so I called myself Bob. It's weird being a Bob,
but I'm getting used to it. Maybe I even like it. Oh!
Watch for Pedro Show. Last music for this edition. Started that chunk off with Dead Bob doing One of You.
A Safe Call from Jumpstart Plowhards.
Volkskimfanger. Volkskimfanger. That's a Dutch band. Yeah, this has got, you know who is in Holland now? It's Andy.
Yeah, yeah. He's
been living there. Yeah. This is called Moan, and he's a buddy, this guy. He works at Paradiso.
Really?
This guy, AJ, you might know him. He had a band called Donkey where he played bass. Now he's got a couple other projects where he plays guitar. He gave up the bass. Like you're giving up the drums to play guitar in this band. Oh, and finally,
never
No Means No, live 2009, the day everything became nothing. Can't tell you the venue, but when you hear it, you'll probably know. So, tell me about this. I know you, with Hanson Brothers, you became a front man and left the drums.
Yeah, that was just for fun, a pet project. We actually began writing Hanson Brothers style music, like the Ramon style, Hanson Brothers, and the name even came up back in like 85, right? You know, Andy hadn't even been with us that long. And we did a thing called No Means No Clones or Ramones, you know, because No Means No was a kind of all this kind of eclectic music. And just for fun, for a party in Victoria, we decided I would dress up as Joey and we would play a Ramones set, like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of, you know, Ramones loving fans out there have done.
You know, Joey was a drummer at first, right?
Oh no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he wasn't before Tommy. Joey was the drummer.
He was the drummer. That was that in like 74 or 75.
73, I think, really early. You know, before there was a Tommy.
Yeah, people don't realize just how long the Ramones were around before that. Before 76, when that first album came out, they were around a long time.
Yeah, yeah. So
the idea was to have fun with this, and then we're like, oh, let's just for fun write some straight up pop punk kind of Ramones style songs. So we wrote like six, kind of whipped them out, and then, you know, whatever. It was just something we eventually wrote some more and maybe played live and it wasn't until, it was actually after Andy left the band in 1991, we finished touring 0+2=1, and Andy stayed in Amsterdam, actually. Moved over there. But Andy and I had, and Ford Pier actually was just very, very close to becoming part of this project of Tom Holliston's called The Show Business Giants. So we were all friends, and we were doing that, too. And then after Andy left and No Means No was in a bit of a hiatus, it was just Rob and I kind of figuring out what we're going to do. Greg Workman at Alternative Tentacles ended up hearing like six of these Hanson Brothers demos and went, you guys, you got to put this out. You got to put this record out. You got to make a record. This is awesome. And we're like, okay, well, we got nothing better to do right now. So, we got Tom Holliston to join up with Robbie and me and record Gross Misconduct, and then Tom did some writing, and that's how that record all came around, and that was how Robbie and I began playing with Tom. I mean, I played with Tom also in his band, The Show Business Giants, but that was kind of how we all got together. We did that. We went down to California, actually did a tour in 93, I guess, and they were like, well, Tom, you know, do you want to try playing No Means No stuff? And he was like, you know, I'm a bit nervous, I guess, maybe. Andy's were big boots to step into, and kind of a little bit of the style of No Means No was not really what he was used to playing, but he, you know, he said, sure, and he dug in and started rehearsing and learning and practicing, and then ended up, you know, it was Tom and Robbie and I for another 20 years.
Yeah. Now, you're saying, though, Hanson Brothers and you being the lead singer, and being lead singer for Dead Bob ain't exactly the same thing.
No, not when you're playing drums. I swore to myself, the next band I'm in, I'm not singing. I just want to play the drums. And, well, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Now I got to sing and play. Oh, it's a nightmare, Mike, I tell you. It's just not. It's
you mean
hard.
For these gigs, these dying gigs that are coming up, you're going to play drums and sing at the same time?
Yes, but and as
oh, because
fact,
I thought the other cat who helped in the studio was okay. Okay.
Yeah, no, I have had to spread some of the vocals around. There's a few things I just physically can't do. So in the rehearsals that we've been doing for the last few months, I've been having to delegate some songs over. You played the, you know, Make-Believe World.
Right.
I basically don't sing almost anything on that song. Ford and Christy look after the lead vocals. I help in the background, stuff like that. You know, I physically can't sing everything. And it's not necessarily from a stamina point of view. It's more just, it's awkward. It's like when your mouth is locked to a microphone and your brain is in singing mode, it's hard to, you know, the drum, you have to compromise somewhere. So there's some stuff I'm doing on the drums that I just really need to concentrate on what I'm doing and not having my
yeah, it makes sense. It seems like the studio dead Bob, maybe more Man Alone is conception.
Totally, yeah.
But
yeah,
then the live dead Bob is more of a collab between the members, so you can realize the tunes. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and certainly, hopefully, we'll become more. This is a bit of an experiment right off the bat. Like I say, we're just playing our very first show coming up. And,
right, right.
And yeah, we need to see how this band begins to develop as a band and not just as a vehicle to reproduce stuff that John Wright recorded in his workshop. So.
Right. Well, there's nothing wrong with that either, but I mean, yeah, I could see it. It's kind of launch pad, yeah.
Yeah, and like, you know, like I say, Ford is, you'd really like Ford Pier. You should find Ford Pier's some of, he's got tons of records. I was listening the other day, and I'm going, you know, I think you would really enjoy this. He's very eclectic. He's very interesting. It's very musical. It's really different. It's a bit of a love it or hate it. There's some people that don't like Ford because it's just too much for them. And other people that just, you know, they love it for that reason. He's very musical, but eclectic. And
all right with me.
And so he's a great writer. Like I say, he wrote that song. He's written two more songs on the next record, which is almost basically done.
Okay, there's another Dead Bob record coming.
There's two more. I had 40 songs or something.
Oh, wow.
Dead
okay.
Bob is sort of like, you know, the clearinghouse.
Sure,
of
sure.
Old songs. So,
okay,
yeah,
so it's not just wait. So. It's not just wait and see how these gigs go. These albums are going to come out no matter what.
Well, no matter what, if it all falls flat, I'll still self-release. I want to, you know, I enjoy this music, and
next one? When do you plan to put the next one out?
Next year. We'll pick a time. We'll get some artwork, but it's more concentrating now on, I was hoping that we'd already have played by now, but it's just things are taking time. So, it's, you know, getting all this, turning on all the engines again, you know, like
well,
you,
I can't
you
come
got off
see
like
the
57
gig.
Gigs or something. You've been gigging constantly forever.
Yeah.
But I'm 10 years out of the game. So, and even though No Means No has a reputation and whatnot, I have that pedigree, I guess. There are people who want to talk to me, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, which is awesome. So we're not starting from scratch as a band, which I can't be unbelievably hard these days. So crowded and just so much going on and, But we're not just picking up where nobody's no left off either. So we're still a new band, and people need to get to know, get to see. So like I say, I was hoping we'd already be played shows by now, but they're taking some time. So next year it's a matter of trying to get down. We're going to get down your way in March.
Oh, that would be beautiful. And look, I want to put out the invite right now. When this second record is ready to come out, will you come back on the show and we can play it and talk about it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Great.
And it's kind of goes in even a little more different direction. So, you know, I don't shy away from, you know, bouncing around genres a little bit. And
that's great.
So it's a little bit more, I don't know, like No Means No is that pretty hardcore three-piece, you know, of course it was all over the place as well, but this one is just a bit more as a five-piece. We've got more voices at our disposal, so A little bit different that way.
A little bit different.
And like I said, that takes time to gel as a band.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
Well, look, it's coming up next week. I wish you all the luck. Keep the keel
Thank
in the
you.
Water, but you know, let that freak flag fly.
Well, yeah, hopefully if we get this tour booked, we're thinking of heading out to South by Southwest by via San Diego. So we'll probably do about 3 weeks down in the States. So, yeah, I'll be down your way.
There's a club in Pedro called the Sardine. See you about playing there, man. I think you'd dig it.
Yeah. Oh, right on.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Make sure it happens.
I
got to thank you so much, John, for being on the show. It's a huge, huge honor to have you aboard. Thank you.
Oh,
so
well,
much.
I have to thank you as well, Mike, for inviting me. And my son, I was telling you, my son, Liam, was quite excited. I'm speaking with you because he's a big Minuteman fan as well. And and he was really digging that, I can't remember the name of your album, though. It was quite a while, 94.
Ball Hunger, Tugboat.
But after that.
Oh. Engine Room?
Yes.
Contemplating the Engine Room.
Yeah, which I quite enjoyed as well.
First opera, yeah. Well, tell him thank you, and thank you, John. That means a lot to me. And I can't wait till we spiel again, okay? So
Absolutely.
Good luck on these gigs coming up. I'm pulling for you.
All right, thanks.
Okay. Till next time. Like I said, let that freak flag fly. Big love from Watt. People, it's been the 11th November 2023 edition of Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.